These are the moments we all live for. How many times have we seen these three work together? Elma Smit out of Africa, straight into the biltong shops of Southwest London. Emily Scarrett, Scazzy Das. Surely you can never run a switch too many times. And Mo Hunt, chippy, snipey, sporty, karaoke. Sounds like the new Spice Girls. Here they come, the good, the Scaz, the rugby.
Hello and welcome to The Good, The Scars and The Rugby, brought to you by our good friends at Vodafone. We're all at home again this week. Scars and Mo are with me. We had to plan this episode recording around the rugby because there has been so much of it. Two red cards in the first 12 minutes, France-Scotland. Scars, was it worth us postponing this in order to allow for you to get your rugby fix?
It actually was. The game was fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed it with a cup of tea on the sofa. Thought it was all going Pete Tong very early doors with the red cards, etc. But it was actually a really good game in the end.
Thank you. Mo, do you have anything to add on the topic?
No, just a little bit more enthusiasm probably, but it was a hell of a game.
Here she goes.
But this is going to be a ritual at the start of every episode now. Yeah. When Mo goes, okay, can we get that with a bit of enthusiasm then, please? We are joined by a total achiever today, and I just want to skim right over the red cards to an absolute firebrand, the former Ireland captain. She's won the Six Nations twice, once Grand Slam champion. She's beaten the Black Ferns. She's gotten to the semi-final of Rugby World Cup. She's got over 70 caps in that green shirt. She's won Ireland Player of the Year twice, 5 years apart. That's an impressive amount of time to spend literally at the top of your game. And quite frankly, we haven't even gotten to the really good stuff. She's also a doctor, and I really should have her on my side of the screen today because I almost chopped my thumb off with the side cutter and I bandaged that like an absolute pro. But she balances the medical, saving people like me, with this impressive playing career. She's retired from international duty. She's still pulling on the number 7 jersey for Bristol Bears. And yesterday she even got over the whitewash with the try against Worcester. So welcome to the show, Dr. Claire Malloy, who is here to tell us about the Women's Alliance feasibility study, which has come back overwhelmingly positive. We'll get onto that soon. But we must have some sore bodies in the house today. A big win for Bristol, Dr. Claire.
Yeah, no, it was a great win. Thanks, Anna. Thanks, Gaz. Thanks, Mo, for having me on. It was a great win. Things just seemed to go our way. We played them like Worcester Warriors 2 weeks before, and it was a much tighter game. I think we kind of polished off some of our execution, and yeah, it was a great win in front of a home crowd, and we did it for the NHS Heroes charity from Bristol and South Western Supermare, and it was great to have them at the game fundraising, so it was a special occasion, and I think we put on a bit of a show.
Elma, you forgot Thatcher's pick of the match as well.
I think I had some inside help. It was an NHS game. Yeah. Helps that I work for them.
Yeah, she had a ton of her own fans there, and it was kind of like it had to happen. Mo, how was that Gloucester Hartbury loss to Saris? How are you? Are you okay?
No, I'm okay. I'm okay. I think you can reflect on it, and I think we kind of messed it up a little bit for ourselves, like too many penalties, too many unforced errors. We're just not really at the races. I think a lot of people came off and just felt like they hadn't really done a lot. So it's going to be hard. Like you can't stay in a game like that against the champions. Like they know how to win. That's why they're so good and have been for so many years. But in the long run, it's going to do us a hell of a lot of good. And yes, body is very sore today. I don't know why, because I don't think I make tackles, but here we are. It's pretty
sore. Because you're dragging down Moles, Mo.
That's it. That's the one. What was that, by the way? When he yellowed me, right? I watched it back. Obviously disagreed, but anyway.
Of course.
Watched it back.
Standard.
The ball carries on. The ball carries on. Like, I get left on the floor. You know that game where you used to have somebody, like, sit behind you and someone would push you over?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what happened to me. But anyway, yeah. Pretty terrible. I was like, I'm not pulling that down. Have you seen the size of that pack? Like, there's no way that I'm collapsing that on myself intentionally. But anyway.
No, we had a big referee education session last episode, remember? You've got to remember how tough a job it is for them. They're just trying to do the right thing. They're trying to have empathy for both sides.
Yeah, no, I agree.
She learned nothing, everybody.
No, I do.
Can we have a moment for the fact that Amy Barrett-Thorne did DM me after that and said she wants to play in that game that you're going to ref? So you need to sharpen up on that refereeing skills, hey?
honestly, I'm here for it. I'm here for it. We've got somebody at the RFU working on it already, I believe. So Brum's on
it. Make it happen.
Scouts, I had a chat with her the other day. Yeah, we're going to make it happen.
I'll play. I'd love to have you ref me most. You ref me most games anyway. Like, I think I should shut this up. There's no real difference. She's off her feet, ref. She's off her feet.
That's her favourite one, yeah, that is.
Obviously. Major complaint. And Exeter Chiefs versus Loughborough. Scaz, so what is your role at this stage?
Great question. I am chief cheerleader, occasional water girl, Monday skills coach, tea maker.
Upgrade.
Yeah. So yeah, a vast array at the moment, but yeah, tough one yesterday. That didn't actually go down, but yeah, it's fair to say we're having a tough season, but we'll keep, the girls are working so hard. It's so tough because the girls are working so hard, but yeah, it's just not quite fallen into place yet.
Let's talk about your season, Claire. How are you feeling about it?
I think it, like everyone, it's getting into the business end of the season now, so we're obviously chasing the top four. Like, every point counts for us. Like, I think that Gloucester game against you guys, I feel we could have caused an upset, and we didn't quite finish it off. Like, you guys showed, like, absolute amazing backline D and really closed us down. But, you know, we're under pressure now. Sarri's got winning yesterday, didn't really do us any favours. Quinn's pulled through today against Sale after a bit of a rocky half-time score. We were like, come on, Sale, do us a favour. But I think, like, every game's key for us now. We've got Lightning in Franklin Gardens next week, and that's going to be a big game. And then we go into Quinn's where, you know, that's where we're kind of tussling for that place into the playoffs, and that's where we want to be. So, yeah, it's business time. We've got to pull out our results, be clinical and really pull it off.
Now, you were at Bristol, what, for 8 years previously, and then spent four at Wasps and now back to Bristol. How good is it to be back? What is it about Bristol?
I think it's the people, like, as in, there's some really good eggs there. Like, good pals with Anne-Marie for a long time, and, you know, she just brings a club around her. She creates an environment you want to play with and be involved in, and, you know, there's some really good eggs there. And then I suppose the evolution of Bristol is massive. So from my time playing there, the original Dings with the big bath shower that we all had to share with the men, and the pitch that was on a hill,
terrible.
I think you guys remember it, Mo, you were there in the old days of Ding. You know, it was an interesting facility. And then, you know, from Portway to the bit of the swamp to that improved, and then Cleve, and then, you know, now I come in and we're in the HBC with the men. There's a chef, the food, like the facilities, it's just ridiculous to say how transformative. You know, it's not the club I left 4 years ago, it's completely different. And, you know, credit to Bristol Bears really buying into the women's team, and, you know, Dave just driving standards, and Tom Luke, it's been enjoyable to be back involved. Definitely, yeah, feel my age. The kids are running around me, you know, they don't know what Friends is, just the references are just gone. Like, it's mad to suddenly just come back. And, you know, Wasps, there was a few of us that were like slightly older, but now it's just me, Rito, and the kids. So yeah, it's been a bit eye-opener, different types of conversations going on, that's for sure. But no, it's been great fun being back involved. You know, it's where I always want to come back to. It was always planned that I'd have my Wasp stint, and then, you know, I'd have to settle down and start real work and Bristol, you know, to kind of have my swan song.
Oh, we have to go back to the shower.
Can I describe them to you?
Yes, for people who are new here.
Mo used to play there as well, so she's probably more on the bandwagon of, it was nice, it was this, it was that. But they were horrific. It was basically like, imagine old school baths that were tiled, grimy, grouting, deep, and so there was the baths, and then there was the showers that turned into baths because the water never drained through the plug holes, and the whole thing was just grim. It was not an enjoyable post-match experience at all.
No,
I think that's, like, fair.
And credit to, you know, Dings. Yeah, Dings have upgraded. You know, Shaftesbury Park has got fantastic facilities. So, you know, Dings have moved a long way, and, you know, we're glad to be part of their journey.
I bet.
I don't even know if I can remember them that well. I just remember, did you have to, like, stand over that massive...
yeah, just step. Yeah, there was like a ledge, a tiled ledge. You just kind of step over it into it. And then, like, if you were late getting in the shower, it'd just kind of be about shin knee height. And you're like, this isn't great. And then if there's like a men's fixture on before or after, it's just like, oh. But, you know, I must say, new dings, lovely, lovely shower facilities, heated floor. I can't complain.
Oh, that's game changer, that.
You know, like sometimes when you play, I don't know about you guys, but because we play and train on 4G a lot, when you go away to like a muddy ground, take like a poof for the shower to have an extra scrub. There was no saving yourself in those. A poof would have not done it.
What?
A poof. What do you call them?
Yeah, poof.
I don't know what I call it, but poof.
Oh my god! What is it called? A scrubber? A scrubber?
Yeah, a poof.
I know what you're exactly on about, but I'll just think of a
you know, like when you go away to the muddy grounds, you just pat the poof.
Oh no! I left my poof at home.
I've always called it a poof.
Not a washcloth, but the plastic thing that's like
kind of onomatopoeic. Yeah. That as well, Scuzzy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna start a poll.
Someone let us know in the comments, please. I have no idea what the English name for that is. I just call it the wishy washy, but hey.
Wishy washy, that's not bad.
And we're mocking me.
Yeah, but I'm a second language speaker. I can get away with crimes like that.
True.
I'm putting this on Insta and I'm gonna say, what do you call this?
I'm gonna Google it.
Okay. It's not a loofah, right? That's so a loofah is a different thing.
Handle. That's got the arm. That's got the wooden handle bit.
And then everyone's like,
Okay.
It's got the poof on the end.
Google it. Poof.
It
is probably just a scrubber. It's probably just like an obvious word like that. Clea, I want to go back to the fact that your teammates don't know friends and that is the ultimate dead giveaway of generational gaps. I had a similar generational gap moment over the last week with a colleague when I was gushing about the fact, guys, I haven't told you this. I bought a bicycle.
Nice. Emma.
Yeah, you did.
But I bought a bicycle that is going to make me look like Angela Lansbury, like Murder, She Wrote. It's got the little basket on the front. And I was humming. And one of my colleagues had no recollection whatsoever.
It's not hitting any bells for me, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, but I think...
Seriously?
Yeah, I think she's because I don't really watch telly.
Angela Lansbury. Yeah.
No, I've got you there. I've seen it, but I think that's only because Irish TV is like a little bit more retro than over here. So we got like programs like just a little bit after everyone else.
South African and Irish TV, same WhatsApp group. We're deep within the Angela Lansbury.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, you know, secondhand.
So I stopped in Pontypool on the way back from Wales after Wales, England yesterday. We drove home via Pontypool today to my friend Michelle, a bit older than I am. And I bought a beautiful Pendleton Summerbee cruiser bicycle.
Class.
So good.
And now I'll be cycling around Richmond.
Can you do your next wrap of the pod for this one on the bike on this week's episode? We are gonna have please.
We know about Elma's coordination skills. That could be dangerous.
You sound like my husband, and that is unnecessary negativity. He also made me buy the most expensive helmet that exists on this earth because he's convinced it's only a question of time until that thing will come in handy.
You're going to be on this retro bike with this massive racer helmet. Like,
please wear a helmet.
It is. It's like peacock green blue, and it changes colour depending on the light. It's so nice.
Oh, fun.
I can't wait. Can we get footage of this?
Come on, Skaz. You need to look a little more excited about this.
I know I am. I'm very excited. And I've also Googled poof, and it's a thing. P-O-U-F. And producer Shira has also texted me to say I'm closer than anybody else is about what it is. So
full marks.
You're welcome.
I think it helps when you've got your pen waggling to tell us that we're wrong. That has just added a whole dimension to it.
Now I found it.
Love that.
But what is it actually called?
A poof. Oh my gosh. Let me show you my...
Actually, I thought you were just closest to it.
No.
But you have to say it in that voice. Exactly. Yeah.
Poof.
Check the group, everybody. Bathing loafers.
Check the group.
And poofs.
Oh, wow. Extra large body puff. Puff.
Poof.
Poof and puff are two different things.
I prefer poof.
The word of the episode. Yeah. The good, the scars, and the poof.
That's you, Mo. Yeah.
Ha ha ha!
does in a rugby.
I love that so much.
Update to the logo immediately, guys.
Yeah.
Now on to much more serious reasons why we have Dr. Claire Malloy here, not to counsel me on, well, me cutting off my finger and also wearing helmets while cycling, which is something you should always do. On Tuesday, the results of the Women's Lines Feasibility Study funded by Royal London was released, and the findings are positive. When I say positive, this is obviously really exciting, Claire, but when we say positive, is that a capital P? And what are we talking?
I suppose we're talking about Royal London's feasibility study and it just being a massive positive response to them, kind of examining how a Women's Lions tour would look like, you know, looking at the branding, the ticketing, the spectators, how the teams would work, what kind of barriers they would face. And it was just kind of an investigation into what would it look like and is it possible? And delighted to say that it is. You know, it's exciting that Royal London have invested in this project. And I suppose it's just looking at the commercial viability of the game. You know, as we increasingly strive to be more professional, we have to be more commercially viable as a product, as the game goes on. So these questions need to be asked and fully investigated so that going forward, we're looking how a Lions Women's Tour would look. And, you know, it's great to think about in the future and, you know, what kind of team could be there. I think it's probably past my age group now, and maybe Mo and Skaz will hang around long enough to play in it. But you know, it's great to think that we finally kind of leveled up the playing field. You know, you can compete in the Olympics for sevens and women's rugby, you can go to a World Cup, you can go to a sevens World Cup, you know, the Six Nations is there, and now we've got World 15, but we haven't really crossed the Lions threshold of yet. But I think, you know, this is a big step forward.
Are you on the
board?
The way that you speak about it, I'm like, are you employed by them? It's class.
Well, Royal London have had me as an ambassador for the last while. You know, it's been great opportunities. Like, I think me and Shauna Brown have had a whale of a time. We got to go to Rankin Studios in Camden and do a photo shoot. And, you know, that was pretty jazzy. Like, the guy, his photos, like his portraits are just amazing. And it's just us two Egypts as rugby players going, yeah, you can do my nails. I'm really sorry about my nails. And then they're doing your hair and your makeup. And you're just like going, oh, but someone's just looked at my nails for a while. And like, rugby players' nails aren't great. But, you know, that goes kind of opportunities. And then we got to go to schools. I brought rugby to my sister's school and got properly schooled. And my sister had to coach people. That was quite humbling. You know, she wrangled the kids better than I did. I was just kind of standing there going, yeah, you passed backwards. Thanks, Emily. Can you just carry on? And I think she really enjoyed it. And then I know Shauna had great fun going back to her old school as well. Just kind of bringing rugby to groups of girls that really haven't really played it. And, you know, that was through Royal London. And it was a great experience. Although I think my sister will never forget how quiet and shy I was with all the kids. So I think she'll enjoy that for time to come.
Have they put any like dates or anything on it yet? In terms of, obviously, you said we might scrape an ability to play in it, but you might not. But that makes it sound quite imminent, almost, with us all ticking on a bit.
I don't know. I say like you've got a long time left in your playing career, girls. You know, there's another couple of World Cups. I think it's still early days. You know, the question of where and who and when are still yet to be answered. I think it's the first step forward, and I think we can get excited and think about potential combinations. You know, like what would be your, I suppose, girls, what would be your Lions dream 15? What would you pick now?
That is way too big a question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'd need about 4 hours to sit down and think about this.
Skaz can't do stuff like this. Yeah, she can't do this off the cuff. She has to have processing time.
Currently fifth players, Mo Hunt.
Yep.
Hit me. I would like to be there, please, Royal London.
I don't think Royal London are going to select the team.
I'll come out of retirement.
Well, they should if they have any say. Shauna is the lawyer already in.
Yeah. We're coaches. Could you imagine? That would be hilarious.
As a Southern Hemisphere, right? Or the Southern Hemisphere representative on this panel, I would like to know, who are you playing against? Do we know yet?
I think I suppose they have to look at it. You know, there's questions like, you know, the strength of France, you know, would we do a World 15 like the Barbarians, the men are playing against in the summer? Like, obviously, USA, Canada, you know, after their last showing in the World Cup, they're a very strong outfit. Like, what would be, I suppose, there's flexibility in the makeup of who we'd play and how it would look. But, like, it'd just be, you know, a really exciting thing to be in. I think about the like the day after going, like, oh, that was a combination I've always wanted to see, but they've always played against each other, like, you know, a Welsh English player, or like the combinations that would be out there. Like, it'd just be really exciting to go, wow, that's, I've always wanted to see these guys play together and watch them play and then put out a performance.
Is this something, Skaz, I'd like to ask you, is this something you think that needs to always be, a bit like the men, always be against the same opposition? Like, do you need to pick three teams now and have that be it forever? Because the women's game shifts and grows. And, I mean, before New Zealand filled Eden Park for the final, no one had ever before that tournament paid to watch women's rugby in New Zealand. So the game had come on so much in exactly a year in that country alone. It does, for me, obviously, as a South African, because the women's game there is quite far behind, I'm kind of going, do we need to pick three countries for the Lions to play against now? And then that just needs to be the same forever?
I don't think it does. I think one of the things, and I'm sure Malloy and Shauna and co would have gone through this, that this needed to be and continues to need to be, is that it's different from the men, because the women's game is different. The landscape is different. The nations are different in terms of their strengths, etc. So I think I saw this as a great opportunity to almost create our own Lions program with this. And I think included in that could be a flexible opposition roster, if that's the right term. I think obviously at the moment it would be, I mean, how cool would the first one down in New Zealand be? I mean, that is probably the obvious one, but that'd be absolutely class. But then I suppose it's actually, where do you go from there? But you could be talking, I mean, I don't know, Malloy would know better than I would, but obviously 4 years in between each one, plus however many years we're going to get it off the ground, the strides that some nations have made in that amount of time and where some nations could be amazing. So I don't think we should, you know, pick three teams and stick with it forever. I think it should be a forever ongoing, flexible, changeable thing, which then again is even more exciting.
Would you put...
No.
Yeah, I know, I totally agree. I think that it needs to be like its own entity. Like, yes, it's following the same thing as the guys in terms of is a Lions team, and the makeup of the team will be the same, but everything else can be different. I think it's a really unique opportunity to be able to do that. And obviously, like, WXV, WX, what is it? P, whatever that is coming in. Like, that's its own thing.
WXP.
I don't even know.
WXV. Sorry. Do we? No.
XV, because it's 15.
X-Puff? Please say it's X-Puff. WX-Puff. It just comes back full circle. WX Puff.
Oh, brilliant. What am I on?
So good.
So obviously, like, that's its own competition, and I think that's so important to happen for the Northern Hemisphere. So yeah, why not run with it? You guys are gone. Scuzzy's gone.
The clue on the V is that it means five, Mo.
Yeah, like 15 has literally just clicked as I said it. I don't know why I thought it was V. What would that even stand for? Yeah, would you throw an England, Ireland or Wales team in to play against? Because obviously Lions don't, because of the nature of where those teams come from. But I think you could potentially get that in the women's game. Like, there would be a big enough player pool to have a Lions team and then play against one of those nations potentially.
Like, as a warm-up game, potentially. Like, as before you go on tour, like, you play... say the Lions play against, that would be good, like, because then you get a home crowd. Say you go off to tour in New Zealand, you get the Lions, they play a warm-up match in Twickenham, why not go big or go home? And then, you know, you get the crowd down, you get the interest. Like, I think Red Roses are selling millions of tickets for the France game anyway at the end of Six Nations, like, why not?
True.
So what, you have England playing Ireland, Scotland, Wales?
Yeah, well, or England play the Lions team that are going.
I like the idea of a warm-up thing to have something at home, but I think that, for me, one of the biggest joys of the Lions is it's that group of England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, etc. going to what is traditionally an old foe somewhere else in the world, not on the British Isles.
Yeah.
The thing is that we do need parity, real competitiveness between those four nations in order to ensure the balance is really good. Claire, how do we get to that point? What do we need to do to ensure that happens?
I think we've seen some progression on that, you know, parity within the Six Nations, and with the introduction of, you know, all nations are now offering full-time contracts to their players. So I think this Six Nations will, or it might be, you know, 2-3 Six Nations down the road that we see that reflected in the quality of the games and the bridging of the gap between, I suppose, England, France, like, you know, just front runners ahead of everyone. And then, you know, we've seen progress with the Welsh programme last year with them going full-time. We've got Scottish players now being contracted, Italy and Ireland, you know, stepping into the foray. So hopefully that will, the gap will narrow. I think, you know, it is a gap and we can't kind of ignore that. And the transition from amateur to professionalism is a big barrier in the game. Like, I just think of my setup at the moment. I'm really lucky. I've got my career. My career's done in terms of international rugby. So I can prioritise my medical career. But if I'm a young player now looking to play in the Premiership and looking to aspire to, you know, play for my country, you have to really make those really hard choices and sacrifices to be available to do your daytime training and everything. So I think, you know, there's a lot of work still to be done. Hopefully the standard Six Nations this year will again be higher with the level of professionalism. But, you know, we're still looking at, you know, people who are going to have to work part-time or work full-time around these schedules. So, yeah, there's gaps there. Hopefully we'll see some progress this year.
I do find it absolutely unbelievable. I don't know how I didn't know this, but the Irish contracting and how it works at the moment is fascinating. Players who are playing in the Allianz Prem 15s, Irish capped, are not contracted, right?
No.
So you have to be playing in Ireland to receive financial support as an Irish capped player. So if you play in England, you have to support yourself. So Sam Monaghan, who's the women's 15s player of players player of the year last year, and Eve Jones, who's women's 15s player of the year, both playing Prem 15s at Gloucester. Neither of them have a contract or are supported by the national setup.
Yeah, and that's what will happen to those girls, as has happened prior to the instructional contracts, is that when they are in camp, they will be financially reimbursed for their time. It's not saying that it's a contract, or it's not saying it's akin to it at all. It's they won't, like, I suppose, be out of pocket for being in camp, but all the sacrifices and training that they do to achieve that standard and maintain that standard will really be footed at the bill, will be footed at the Premiership teams. You know, the likes of Gloucester supporting them, facilitate them, and, you know, their own work, you know, what jobs they do. And I think it's a challenging stage in Irish rugby when we're transitioning to these contracts and how our league looks. You know, I can say for a deuce of them, you know, Niamh and Sam are looking at what league is the most competitive in the world, and they're choosing to play there.
Yeah, and so you would, surely, as a player. And obviously Ireland does know how to set up a great structure. The men are looking like they're playing a different kind of rugby to almost anyone else in world rugby at the moment. So it's not like there isn't enough talent or enough kind of structural know-how, experience of how to run high performance and make sure that it does actually yield the results. It's a men's setup that is absolutely firing at the moment. How do you address that? What do you need to do to get there?
I suppose the men's is particularly unique. You know, we look at the Leinster Schools model and the, you know, the engine and machine that is the Leinster Academy into the Leinster setup. You know, we're looking at all the talented players, the majority, vast majority coming from that. And that's, you know, these are private schools that fund, you know, high performance rugby programs. And they are, if you are reaping the benefit from them, and that's what we're seeing in across the provinces, that, you know, they're just dominating most time. And then you look at, you know, the likes of Connacht, Ulster and Munster just trying to compete with them. And they're struggling. So it's a unique kind of setup. You know, we don't have, you know, private schools that are going to develop high performance academies for girls to excel and, you know, create our own little factory. We have to look outside it and think outside the box in terms of, you know, it's not one rule. And, you know, as Scott says, it's, we have to do our own thing. You know, we can't just model it on the men's game, because the men's system won't work for the women's system in Ireland. They have to look at, you know, investing in the league and the AIL, creating a competitive provincial structure and, you know, giving them game time. We've seen in the combined provinces have dominated the kind of the Celtic Cup, the first ever run of it. And it's given, you know, vital experience to girls that haven't played any kind of form of international rugby. You know, the Thistles, the Welsh Development Side and combined provinces, you know, have had
a couple extra games in the build up to Six Nations, and hopefully that's, you know, a development pathway that's not really been explored, and you know, that competition will hopefully get stronger. But they have to look at the club game as well.
Do you have your own thoughts on kind of how, where you'd like to see it go? Because obviously there's always the kind of the battle around, obviously, players playing in Allianz Premiership, brilliant for them and their own personal development, but potentially not great for the Irish domestic game. So actually, do you bring all of them, or you obviously attempt to bring people back to develop that there, or do you leave them kind of playing elsewhere, or essentially doing what they think is best for them in their individual game, and then reaping the rewards of that potentially internationally? Because it's quite a hard thing. You kind of go round and round with it, but to try and get to a point whereby you're almost doing both. You're developing the internationals the best that they can as individuals, but also the domestic game in Ireland, which then will also continue to develop the internationals, if that makes sense.
Oh, completely. I think it's hard not to see, you know, the viewpoint of the girls in the Alliance and how, you know, they've chosen to play in the best league. But then you look back in the AAL and you're thinking, well, how much, what, these girls aren't being exposed to the Cliona Maloney, the Sam Monaghan, the Niamh Jones. Like, you think of the battles we have in week in, week out with your opposite number in the Premiership, and you're better for it. Playing against players better than you makes you better. You have to learn. It's a steep learning curve, but you learn. So I think, you know, improving club structure would be kind of my first. If I could wave a magic wand of the Irish system, I'd be like, let's invest in quality coaching, S&C, and the infrastructure of the Irish club system. Do we need as many club teams? Maybe not. But we should support them to develop a competitive league so that players like the future Sam Monaghans don't leave. They stay put, they play in the league, they develop more players, and you get more talent around them. You know, player base in Ireland is small. We've seen that when we try to juggle the 15s and 7s, you know, we don't have enough players to spread across both boards. We have to, you know, we have to choose one, or we can't do both as successfully as we'd like. You know, the 7s girls have had fantastic success. That's taken years in the making. You know, that's Lucy Mahal, Amy Lee Murphy. They've been that team for years, Stacey Flood, and they're just coming to fruition. You know, it is a long-term project to kind of change the tide of the 15s game and develop it, but it's not as if they don't have the success with the 7s, and they've shown it that with time and energy and support they can develop a successful team. And, you know, hopefully the girls will qualify for the Olympics now, and keeping those top four seedings. Really,
you are still playing really well. I mean, you've retired officially, right? Like, any doubts?
I don't think I'd survive it. Like, I'd be injured like all the time, as in I work mostly, and I train as much as I can, and Dave Ward's been incredibly accommodating, and I think maybe being fresher on the weekends helps, just enjoying playing, throwing the ball around, getting to run around and move a bit in the Bristol game plan of run it from everywhere. You know, maybe it suits me, but I do get knackered if I make a break, and I just want to sit in the wing for a little while, and I'll come back in and play. which I think I heard there was a bit of that yesterday. I think the physio was like, "Are you all right? You got up really slow." And I was like, "I'm just blowing. Sorry, Aaron. I'm grand. I'll keep playing." So yeah, I'm enjoying it. There's no stress. It's just kind of expressing yourself. I didn't really enjoy the last bit of my international career. You know, just didn't really perform the way I wanted to. Got very anxious and stressed about every performance camp, and it's just really nice to just go out and enjoy my rugby now, and, you know, have a lovely swan song with Bears.
What made you stay playing with the Bears when you quit, when you retired internationally?
I finished the season out with Wasps after I retired. So I retired like post World Cup qualifiers, which I don't really ever want to talk about again, to be honest. It was just a miserable experience. I don't think I'll ever go back to Parma or ever. I had a year off more of work, so I stayed in London playing with Wasps, and then, you know, work came calling. I could only be a junior doctor for so long. So I kind of had to step back into coming back to Wales and working full time. And, you know, Bears seemed like the natural fit. And I always planned to go back. I made a promise to Rito, I'm sure I did. She's like, "You said you'd come back. I'll definitely come back." And yeah, no, it's been good being back playing with them.
It's interesting for me that you do sort out this balancing act so well. Considering what we hear about the NHS on a daily basis now, as someone who's relatively new to having access to the NHS, I think it is absolutely phenomenally impressive. Like, honestly, just the coolest thing ever. But it's because I have spent so much money and so much energy worrying about access to healthcare, both for me, but also for my loved ones. Talk to me about the work that you do now outside of rugby and how heavy that load really is. I mean, outside of the pandemic, which is that's a conversation in and of itself. How many days a week are you Dr. Claire Malloy, and how many days of the week are you a rugby player?
With this current rota, it's kind of 60-40, 60 work, 40 rugby really, and not much in between. So I'm working in Swansea in Morriston Hospital at the moment. I've just literally switched mid-season from Cardiff to Swansea, so that's an extra hour on the road. So it's less than ideal. But my days are busy. My shifts are 10 hours. When I'm on nights, I'm often in charge of the department. And yeah, it's stressful work. I enjoy it. You know, it's a good team. I've good crack with the nurses, all the staff. But yeah, it can be heavy going at times. You know, I'll be the one that breaks the bad news to someone about a catastrophic thing on shift, and then I'll have to go see the next patient. So it never really gets any easier. But I really enjoy my job. I've always loved my job, and I'm grateful and lucky to be in that position. I don't think I could do anything else really at this point. I'm too long in it. But it's, the NHS is under pressure at the moment. It's under stress, you know. Everyone's on strike. I think I turn up to work and I'm told who's on strike today. Is it the ambulance drivers? Is it the nurses? Is it the physios? So I think despite all there's so much goodwill in the NHS, and you know, I've come to a new hospital in a new situation, and they've been amazingly welcoming and helpful, and they love the rugby already. they're just mad to support. You know, I've had my consultants out to Shaftesbury Park watching. I think they particularly enjoyed the Gloucester game. And then we'll be going to the Wales Ireland game in Arms Park, and I'm sure a crowd from work will come to watch. And it's just great to bring rugby to them. They're so embracing and accommodating. I'm hoping they're really accommodating very soon so I can play the Quins game, which I'm currently on nights for. So we'll test the waters tomorrow with that question. It's like, can I not work that day? And as I try to rearrange shifts. So it's a challenging but really enjoyable job.
What team do you work in?
A&E. So, yeah, front door. See everything from, like, some people book in with broken toenails. Honest to God.
With what?
Do you want to take this time to educate people on what they should be going to A&E with? Because I feel like, should we just get it out there? It is nuts. Okay.
Anything you've had for longer than a week that's not causing you any harm probably doesn't need to come to A&E. but I will always say, and I always have this caveat, that just because I know it's not worrying, if it's something that's making your life miserable, this worry and stress, if you come to me and, yeah, I might send you away, but I'll tell you something to worry about. So, you know, any person that books in, they might think this is the end of the world, or they had a friend that this was the end of the world for. So I would always be forgiving to any presentation that maybe could have gone somewhere else, because you don't know what their background is, and, you know, people shouting me at, they're waiting for hours, and you're kind of like, okay, but you've been told by someone else that you need to come immediately, and then you wait 16 hours to be seen. Like, that's scary.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got to be quite patient. As long as I'm caffeinated. If I'm not caffeinated, then
whole different person.
I had a specialist in South Africa who drank only green tea. Are you a green tea caffeine person, or just, you know, coffee, black, strong?
Strong and milky. Don't judge me.
Oh.
I think that's all right. I'm kind of the same.
Bet there's some rank coffee that goes around in hospitals as well.
Oh, God, yeah. When times are tough. I think I've had the accident of getting it from the trolley once, and it was actually tea and coffee, toffee together, and I had several hours left of my shift now. And I think I had four sips, and I was like, I can do this, but I can tell you, NHS tea mixed with NHS coffee, it's lethal. It's
What is the best A&E story that you, I mean, going to the pub with you after work must be priceless. I had a doctor friend in South Africa who honestly sometimes told us stuff that would make, literally make people feel a little sick. So obviously we don't want to induce like VOMs here, but what is the wildest stuff that comes in there, as in the front door, as you say?
Well, it's usually things that have gone in the back door that are the wildest. And yeah, there's, yeah, I've seen some interesting x-rays in my time.
I slipped and fell.
Slipped and fell, yeah, classic. Or I don't know how it got there. Or yeah, that is a charger with it. Yeah, so... So yeah, I think this is the classic x-ray fun of, you know, what is this?
So what would your role be? Would you have to then go and speak to them about it?
You'd be surprised that people like divulge stuff, you know. People are pretty honest, and we're obviously the last resort. They've tried, vast majority have tried not to come in and tried to deal with it themselves, and they've got to the, you know, no option left that they come to us to relieve them of their object. So they're quite open, and then you're just like, okay, let's find who are the best people to remove said object in what shape and what capacity, and are you still well, do you like some pain relief?
And you can't giggle in their face. I mean, you can't go
no of course not. You could be very, you know, very serious, and you know, I've had great conversations with patients that have brought relatives in, and you kind of know the nature of what they've come in with, and then you're kind of like offer them, like, do you want your parent to leave the room? And then they're like, no, I'd like them here. And you're kind of like, oh, right, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't have my parents there in any form or shape of that conversation. But, you know, like, we try to help them. It's like any problem, you know, between a broken leg and something that needs to come out. Same.
What's the chat in the nurse's station? Do you all have like a little giggle about it after that, or?
Yeah, like we'd know, like we'd be professional.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's you'd be aware, you could see a complaint. So you know a foreign body is the name, so you'd wonder what was there, and then make sure they get the best care.
Definitely.
Love that. So professional.
Got
I would lose you my know? Shit. I'm not gonna lie. That was me. There was no way. I'd literally be tearing into them. Like, what are you doing?
Oh, like, yeah. You'd kind of be like, it wasn't the most sensible idea of what's happened here. Or or like, no, you can't have it back.
Oh.
But that's usually not my role. My role is usually to find them the person that will help them, and I leave that to my whatever colleagues. Usually some form of surgery need to do that, so I don't so really have good. Much to do with that. I just make sure they get pain relief and, you know,
so
get
good.
To the right people.
I read that you started drawing in the last few years of your rugby career, your professional, like, international career, as a way to de-stress before games. Do you do that still? Do you draw to de-stress around your doctor duties?
Every now and again. I think it's not as frequent. I think I had an exam, which really helped. So then it just became an excuse. It's like, I'll just draw something because that's revision, but it's not revision, but it's kind of revision. So I haven't really drawn as much lately, and then I'm not really as stressed about games anymore.
Well, the most de-stressed rugby you could probably play is the Bar Bars. Talk to us about that, because it's probably the closest thing in the women's game at the moment that you could get to a Lions team.
Oh, the Bar Bars was amazing. Like, it was just such good crack. Like, I remember the Kiwis that were there with Fifa Musuli, Linda Tonu, Jay Lavea, and they were just, you know, players I played against, look up to. They still don't like to talk about 2014, so that was quite enjoyable for me and Jill Burke, who were in camp at the same time. And then, you know, playing with Rocky, I'd known her from WAS, Keatsy, Laura Keatsy, one brief time she wasn't injured. God, poor girl, has no luck. Tam, and then just kind of get to see the different kind of experience of like playing with loads of different players. You know, having Anna Richards coaching us was just class. I remember I dropped a ball quite hungover when we were training one of the days, and I was like, just died inside as she ate me alive.
Did she?
And I was like, okay,
yeah. She was like, you will not let that ball drop. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to drink much for the rest of the tour until we play the game. I think George Gulliver and Rocky were leading the social, and Hannah Casey. They were very, very social. I think they were probably the most sore heads. And then I remember playing in Twickenham against England, like of all teams to play as a Barbarian story. Like, can we not play someone else? Because they were like super serious. And I just remember running around going like, because we have to hit them all. And they're like, oh yeah, we'll maul D. Like, no, you have to hit it, please hit it. And just kind of running around as Jay was hanging out in the wing, because she had a great week on holiday. And I was like, mate, please just run around a bit more. But yeah, it was just an amazing experience, I think, like, to get an idea of what it's like to be a male, you know, a male player, I suppose, and have that parity of all the experiences, the functions, everything was done jointly, which was just amazing. And yeah, you know, credit to Fiona Stockley for, you know, pushing our cause and organising it. And, you know, big congrats. She's now a member of the board. So it can only mean more Women's Barbarians games to come.
Well, it was unreal.
Yes.
Guys, you've got to get yourself on the tour one time.
Yeah.
Like, one of the best weeks ever.
I'm hoping so.
So much crack. And Mo, you had all the drama with the stadium as well.
Yeah, that was mad. Like, honestly, we taxis into the stadium in our COVID masks, like, because the game got pulled forward. My mum missed the anthem, bless her. She was apparently, like, dad was driving, trying to find the car park, and she was like, just let me out. Run through a puddle. Her and my auntie were, like, sprinting down the road trying to get to Twickenham, but they missed it anyway. But, yeah, no, it was class, like, running out of Twickenham like that. It was mad. The whole week was the best thing ever.
But that's the beauty of those moments where kind of big characters and brilliant people just come together. And, you know, like people who used to potentially be opponents of yours or that you've watched. I love the story that James Haskell told, where the Hask said Rory Best thought he would like, they was kind of worried about being in a team with a big personality such as our friend James. And then the two of them basically, I mean, borderline fell in love, besties.
Yeah.
Best men's Lions memories over the years, as a fan and an onlooker and someone who's really passionate about the game, what stands out for you, Claire?
I think it was the second Sean O'Brien's try in the New Zealand series. You know, like it was just such a good team try. And you know, he'd come back from such adversity, like he barely played for Ireland, like in the years around, he just had so much injury, and just him scoring that try and them tying the series, you know, just, it was amazing. I think Ireland beating the New Zealand last season in their own summer series is probably close second, but it was just such a good game of rugby, and, you know, they're kind of backs against the wall, they had to win, you know, to continue to compete in the Test series. I think that's one of my favourite moments.
Yeah, that was mine as well. I think probably because you remember it the best, because it was obviously one of the more recent ones. But I also, like, Liam Williams breaks from the 22, Welsh, Elliot Daly has a touch, English, Sean O'Brien finishes Irish. So you're kind of seeing the whole, like, everything together in terms of one of the great joys of the Lions on the pitch, as well as it being like a 90-metre try. Sean O'Brien literally flops over the try line at the end, but he gets all the glory for it. But yeah, I love that try. The other couple of things that are some of my favourite memories, obviously it's been very prominent recently, obviously Doddy Weir's comment in the team room around mistaken identity, and also the things around like the dice rolling, Simon Zebo calling the coach to ask to be captain next season, just things like that. There's some of the off-field stuff, which I'm sure were very prevalent in Barbar's stuff as well. But I think that's again one of the biggest exciting factors, I suppose, at the prospect of maybe being able to do something like that, or some of the girls getting involved, is not just the on-field stuff, playing with people you've played against for such a long time and admired for such a long time, but also just being able to have a laugh and hang out and celebrate, you know, be in that rugby culture with those people as well.
My favourite moment would come as absolutely no surprise to absolutely anyone. It was the tour where I was actually there, one of about seven people who saw what was happening outside of the two squads. Because I was in the bubble for the 21 tour in South Africa. So I was one of the few people who was actually in the ground to see Morne Steyn do it for the second time. And one of my best bits was the press conference post the match. we were the eyes and ears of the entire world's media because we were the part, literally myself and two guys, we were in the bubble with the Springboks. So the entire Springbok press conference was literally just a laptop. So we would build this little setup and then they would sit behind the, in front of the little computer and take turns to sit in front of the little computer to do like Zoom press conferences. So it's the end of the Lions tour. Well, nice day is just done there. And he sits down for his press conference and Eben Etzebeth and Siya Kolisi is literally standing, obviously in Mornay's eye line. The camera is literally right here next to the little laptop. Being such clumps, and the media obviously can't see anything, and the media manager's like, stop it, stop it, and they're making, I mean, hand signals, physical movements. The level of maturity was top class, but he is just such a cool customer. And I think the thing about Mornay as a person is the fact that he would be the person who would keep everyone quite light and quite fun, even early on in the tour when he wasn't playing much and he was just getting, well, he was having a good time a lot of the time. Whenever he'd walk into a room, you could see a lot of the younger players like, oh, he's here. Some people were a little, you know, starstruck by him, but he's just always such a pick-me-up in every space that he went into. For him to then have that moment for the second time around, it literally couldn't have been like a nicer, more genuine person. But I know that everyone on the Lions side of the conversation, like, honestly, couldn't with that happening twice in a row.
How was it being in camp with them the whole time?
It was a difficult tour, but I don't think that that comes as a surprise to anyone. Mm. Obviously, COVID was a bad, very real thing that was happening, but there were also riots on the outside. And then they banned alcohol. Literally the night the Lions plane took off in London, I saw the news coming through, or there were rumours that it was happening, and I was already in the bubble. And I texted Richard and said, you have to bring me camera kit very urgently. And he put 2 6-packs of camera kit and 2 or 3 bottles of camera kit and also a bottle of 15-year-old camera kit in a box with some sweets and, you know, other essentials, and sealed the box, like lots of plastic in it and stuff because, you know, it's stuff that can break. And sealed the box up. I wrote my details on it and he had to drop it off. There was literally borderline barbed wire fencing around the property. The whole hotel was cordoned off and there was a police station across the road and there was a security guard standing downstairs. It was like Fort Knox. And then he had to drop the box and I could wave at him through the window. And they sprayed it down with like sanitizer and it had to sit in the kind of, there was like an exclusion zone and it had to sit there for like 3 hours and then I could go get my soggy box of camera kit.
So good.
It didn't need sanitizing. It was alcohol. You're fine.
Yeah. It's camera kit, remember?
Camera kit. Yeah.
Camera kit. Yeah. Really important. But yeah, it was honestly, people, it was a rough time to have to deal with a lot of stress about a tour that none of us were quite sure was actually, like, at any point we were expecting to just get a message on a WhatsApp group that says, okay, you know what, the tour's off, pack your stuff, go home, this thing isn't actually happening anymore. Literally until the first, I'd say probably about 2 days before the first test, we were still kind of like, is this or isn't it? So it was the most stressful period, but also just because you really wanted for the South African players. I think it's different when you play for the Lions because there is a Lions tour every 4 years. But when you're on the other side, there's only a Lions tour every 12 years. And so you really want it to go ahead for the sake of people who will most likely only have one shot at this in a career.
Is it seen as special? I don't mean as special, but obviously, I mean, to be selected or have the opportunity to be selected for a Lions team for any of the home nations is like probably, I think most of the guys would put it right up there as in terms of career highlights. Is it seen the same, obviously being selected for South Africa when went to play against the Lions?
I did a ton of these interviews before and during the tour. And there was not one of them where I had to edit out whether they ranked it lower than something else. Like for every single one of the players that we spoke to, and even in the lead up to it, you know, people who had played in previous Lions tours and stuff that you do these kinds of interviews and Q&As and things for, all of them said the same thing. They said, remember, if you're English or Irish or Scottish or Welsh, you probably in a 10 to 15 year career have three shots at this. There is a Rugby World Cup tournament every 4 years, which is a long cycle, but there might be more than one cycle in your international career. There is only one Lions cycle in a Springbok career.
Unless you're Morne Steyn.
For France, Steyn, Morne Steyn. Unless your surname is Steyn, then you probably have more than one shot at it, yes. And that's really important.
I've never thought of it like that before.
I'm so ready for this documentary, by the way. Living with the Lions hasn't seen anything yet.
Oh, that's going to be quality.
So good.
Absolutely quality.
Who would be the best? Who would be the Irish characters?
Yeah.
Lindsay Peat. Legend.
Lindsay Peat, definitely. Lindsay Peat would be all over it. She'd be quite, she'd be very good. She'd have to be in charge of court. Definitely in charge of court. She would be the judges. Who else would be really good? Sam Monaghan. You know, she can organise a piss up in a brewery, that's for sure. No, she'd be a great character and a great tourist. Tricky Adele McMahon has her moments. I think anyone who's played with her will know what she's like. And, you know, there's got to be a farm fix for any problem she can offer you. She'll tell you about something that they put on a cow once that will fix you, or something that a horse has had. She's just got those remedies, that bit of honey on your head, or that, you know, just anything old wives' tale, she'll have it for you and ready. So, you know, she's kind of, you know, Swiss Army knife of a human as well. So I think an excellent tourist. And hilarious.
Who has the Simon Zebo style gift of the gab? Who'd be calling their club coach asking for the captaincy outright, and the coach wouldn't even think it's strange?
I think Lindsay Peat would have a go, definitely, for sure. That girl has no shyness about her whatsoever. She'd probably ask for the coaching role as well at the same time. She'd just like, you just relax there. I'll take over. I can captain, coach, narrate the whole show.
I reckon Hannah Botterman would give it a good go as well. Yeah. I reckon she'd be very good at it. Yeah. And she's Coach definitely Paul. Got enough years to have a few Lions tours in her.
I feel like we need to make her do that anyway. Can we have her back on the show? Welsh girls, who's Mo, you know them.
Yeah, some of the Welshies. Ooh, who would be good?
Jazz Joyce would be funny.
Kelsey Jones is quite a good talker. I think Jazz Joyce though, probably. Yeah. I don't think coaches would question that either. She's so funny. Scott, she's such good value.
You've got a good Northern contingent there with you. Any of the Scots people wouldn't bat an eyelid about them having some strong thoughts on captaincy or coaching roles?
Oh, CB, 100%.
Rona.
Yeah. Christine Bilal Rona Lloyd would be funny. I don't know if Rona would get it out. She'd be too stuttery, whereas CB...
No, Rona would she'd be bad, terrible. But
CB would go
so funny to
full
watch.
Character, and she'd be brilliant at it.
She'd be able to pull it off.
100%.
Oh, how sick to go on tour with all those so people. Good.
Exactly. Just
in all of them in one room.
How long to this in, Willow? Come on, give us some good news.
Oh, just have to wait to find out. Like, yeah, just think of the tour in itself. Like, just... You know, we've not even got to the rugby. Yeah, just the crack you'd have with all the girls. Like, I would say from our Welsh country to Bristol, I think Kira Bevan would have all the lip and would be well able. Yeah, she's a cheeky chappy. That girl would have no question. You're asking for a captaincy, probably a bit more kicking duties. I'm sure she'll ask for that.
I love that.
So good.
Now, while we've got you all collected here, big news over the last week or so, the final of the Prem 15s. Mo's nodding. She's nodding. She knows exactly where I'm going. King's Home. Mo, we're going to be there in some capacity, one way or another, right?
Yes.
Pretty
sure. Yeah. It's not. Like, we're not getting ahead of ourselves at all. Obviously, like, it would be unbelievable to run out there. I think more so because it's just such a hotbed of like rugby fans. Like people genuinely love rugby around here. It just cracks me up because 2 years ago there was no heat at all. Like 2 years ago, Kingsham had the final. Last year, Worcester had the final. There's no heat. There's nothing said about it. So if anything, it's kind of like a little bit of a privilege that everyone's talking about it and like getting a bit irate about it because obviously they think that we might be there. We're not there. We're not there at the minute. We're not even thinking about it till. I said to someone the other day, but like until you're potentially walking out on that pitch because you don't know what's going to happen with injury. Obviously, you've got to get through a hell of a lot of the rest of the season as well to give yourselves a shot at it. So until you're actually on that pitch walking out, like I'm not even going to let myself go there. But the thing that cracks me up, we've had two games at Kingsham this year. Our home ground is the El Pass Arena. So all these people saying it's home. And also, we might not even get a home changing room. That would be rubbish. So... Yeah, no, I know that they've done a lot of work on it. I think the final was announced back in October. They got the bid for it back in October, so before anything had happened. And Gloucester Rugby have really bought into the women's game. Like, they love it. Nicole, who heads up the marketing, and I think she headed up the bid for it, put so much time and effort and work into the bid, and, like, they're really chuffed about it. So it was a little bit sad to see how much heat there was. Like, obviously, I understand it from the other side, but... At the same time, like, it's kind of not our fault that they're so progressive with what they want to do and where they want to take the women's game.
Yeah, like I enjoyed the controversy this week.
Yeah.
Enjoyed various different players commenting on it. I think that's you know, it's promoting the game. It's posing a question. I think, yeah, people can have their opinions about it, but, you know, Kingsham has hosted a Red Roses match spectacularly with a full crowd. So I think, you know, could be a Gloucester home final for them. But is it their home? They play in the El Pass Arena. You know, that's quite a difficult place to travel to. Is the Kingsham going to be the same for them? You know, it's going to be a different change of environment. And who knows who's going to be in the final? You know, we've seen results be very close. You know, there's a very competitive top five, I'd like to think, obviously from a Bristol perspective. So, yeah, it's a good conversation to have. And, you know, people to challenge it, ask questions is good because it just provokes debate and, you know, buys people into the game and gets them thinking about, you know, bigger questions. If they're not, these are people who are going to be there, are going to be watching and are interested. And a lively Twitter debate shows the level of interest in the women's game. You know, we have the same conversation 2 years ago, probably not. This is where we're at now. You know, we're selling out Eden Park. We're having controversy around a potential home final for some people, if that's what they want to perceive it. But it just reflects the growth of the game.
Sorry, yeah, Connie Powell's Instagram was my favourite. She she basically Instagrammed something and she was like, great to see we're picking final locations based on the night out now. Claiming that Las Vegas is...
Yeah, it was like, great to see...
Top of the list.
The best in town.
Honestly, the things that I saw in Cardiff in Chippy Lane...
Chippy Lane!
England, Wales...
That's on.
Las Vegas has a lot to live up to. I mean, I had to take videos and photos to send to my friends and went, this is the wildest. And I was at uni at a pretty wild place. This is the wildest thing I have seen in a while.
Did you get stuck in?
Did you?
Yeah, yeah. No. We had a good night. There were chips after midnight. You know, when you're on the carbs post the bell, then it's been a great one.
That's standard procedure.
So the Allianz Prem 15s could go any of about five ways at the moment, which is compelling and phenomenal and just the best thing ever for the game. And things that are not the best thing ever for the game, your old club, Wasps, having to rely on GoFundMes to ensure that they can meet their obligations and travel to away games as a result of, well, everything that's happened there this season. You've been on a journey with them for the last few years. How difficult is it to see your club in this position? And should we just use this little platform to help them raise that last £5,000 to get to the end of the season?
Oh, completely. Like, it's devastating what's happened with Wasps. Like, no one could have predicted it. Not what you want to see happen to one of the oldest women's clubs. The history behind it, you know, the alumni, like... And, you know, the history makers, you know, the Sue Day, you know, if you think about what players and what servants of the game that the club has produced, it's, you know, devastatingly sad to, you know, not have them be in Alliance 15s next year and have to GoFundMe. Like, we look at, you know, DMP, everyone rallied together in the summer to support their GoFundMe campaign, and that allowed them to compete this year. And, you know, no one thought WASP would be in that situation, and it's hard going. You know, I feel for the girls. I still like lots of friends in the team, know the coaching staff, you know, LJ Adams and Lee Bish. You know, it's so sad to see what's happened. You know, it's completely outside their control. You know, they're just girls who want to go play rugby and play a high standard. So hopefully, you know, people will get on board. You know, there's been good support from the GoFundMe so far, and more people plug it in, because, you know, they want to finish their season. They don't want to miss fixtures. You know, they couldn't feel against a front row against Gloucester and had to, you know, give up those points after the RFU decided that's where it is. So, you know, we want games to be played. We want fixtures to be fulfilled. We want WASPs to, you know, get something out of this season. We want those players, you know, the people that devote the same time and commitment as any other player in the Premier 15s, to have a positive experience, and, you know, to respect the history of the club. And, you know, we don't know what capacity they'll be playing in next season, in what league, what championship, how that will work. You know, it's mad to be here. I think I'm still a bit like taken aback that this time last season we were playing Quinns in the Rico, hosted by the men's team, you know, staying up the night before. Like, it's just worlds apart. You know, we got a big victory against Quinns this time last year, and now this is where they are. And yeah, my heart goes out. I think anyone who's played for WASP knows it's a special club, and you know, you're never not a WASP. Once a WASP, always a WASP. And I hope that's the legacy that still continues. Unfortunately, it's new capacity outside Prem 15s.
The oldest women's team in the country. They've made it to so many top four finishes and a Prem semi-final. So make sure you go to gofundme.com/wasps-women-way-trip and just go find them on social media and chuck a fiver in their direction. If we can find 5,000 people to do that, or no, 1,000, we're good to go. Not a long way off at all. But I think that the fact that they have raised £9,555 so far, and all they are supported by at the moment is WASPs FC, the amateur club, speaks volumes about the kind of support that they enjoy in their community, and that the role they've played until now, and the fact that the players who are there really do want to represent the shirt and the club and make people proud. And we celebrate them for that. I think that's where we're going to leave it for just now, because we're definitely still going to be talking about the Women's Lions and where this goes. And you're going to probably see and hear more from Dr. Claire Malloy. Hopefully not, because you need to go to, what's the hospital's name in Swansea?
Oh, don't ask me by name, Christ. Morriston Hospital. I'll be there.
Morriston
yes. Hospital.
Hopefully you don't need anything removed. Go bother her with your broken toenail. We're really excited to keep watching you soar in that number 7 shirt for Bristol, and for the end of the season to be brilliant one. Skaz, I hope that you get a good poof session in. I didn't know how to. Where do we even go with that?
Where's the verb?
Yeah, where is the verb?
Not there. Yeah.
Yeah. We'd love to see, show us what you think of when you hear us talk about the poof.
We don't want that. We don't want that content. I don't want to see that.
And on that topic, we've been the good, the Skaz, and the rugby. We're upholding fault.
Extra P's are everywhere.
Yeah, all of the P's, the WXP's are rolling off here. And on that note, we've been the good, the Skaz, and the rugby, a Folding Pocket production, produced by Shira Kilgallen. No P's needed.
You've been listening to The Good, The Scaz and The Rugby. A bit like Loose Women, but with less emphasis on working on your pelvic floor.
Thank you. We've been The Good, The Scaz and The Poof. Bye.